Hi, this is Mel, and I'm watching the Cubs lose from a rooftop, but you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, Mel. Go Cubs. Postseason baseball. What could go wrong, right? Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 989. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. And on the show today, we hear some new local music with a world influence. We also learn about a new local art show coming up at the end of October celebrating Black Fine Art Month and the latest with tax increment financing. We've got some updated numbers on those TIF districts that span Chicago. So we've got some good Chicago stories for us this week. And another Chicago story I saw a few days ago is about something I've talked about on this show before. That's the struggle for environmental justice in Chicago. On the southeast side of the city, Cheryl Johnson has been fighting polluters and industries who create the pollution for 64 years. She's pushing a Hazel Johnson named ordinance, named after her mother, before the city council. The ordinance says when you want to set up a factory or a heavy polluter or a business that spills fumes into the air, you must first consider the health of the people who already live there. You have to measure impact, and you can't treat the neighborhood as a dumping ground. The ordinance was introduced in April and is backed by the mayor. According to the Sun-Times, quote, "The ordinance was part of an agreement the city made with the feds under former President Joe Biden. Those communities have been the landing place for large industrial operators and heavy truck traffic supporting those industries. Just last month, however, President Trump said he won't enforce the civil rights agreement with Chicago to change its zoning and land use practices. Trump has said the feds have more pressing concerns." That means Johnson and the other environmental advocates have to persuade city council members to support the ordinance that aims to fix the problem. Alderpersons voted Thursday to move the measure to the city council's zoning committee for debate, end quote. So that's where we are. Of course, locally, there's some opposition to this ordinance. Some unions and business groups want to weaken it due to jobs and the cost. But what Cheryl is fighting for is for the health of her community. And that's something we would all fight for if we were in her shoes, right? So hats off to Cheryl Johnson. Keep fighting that good fight. And hats off to you, the listener, for being here. Last year, Chicago had 121 active tax increment financing districts, also known as TIF districts. Tom Tresser is someone who has been tracking the impact of TIFs because these districts are taking property tax money and they are supposed to use that money to improve blighted areas of the city. Through the TIF Illumination Project, Tom has uncovered what's really been going on with the TIFs. Tom is a civic educator and public defender, as he says, and he is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Mike, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be on your air. It's enlightening.
Well, I appreciate that. You are always hard at work here, keeping an eye on the city, and really, we need like millions of eyes on the city, I think. So, okay, I kind of explained TIFs, but just as a refresher, your quick elevator pitch, we run into you on the street. What's a TIF, Tom? What do you say in 30 seconds?
Yeah, well, it's a district drawn by the city, run by the mayor. It's the Department of Planning and Development. You know, it's a city thing. And in this district, in this little geographic space, we suck away property taxes over a period of 23 years, essentially. That's what happens. That money, this property tax money that is supposed to go, you know, to operate things like the schools and the fire department and the parks and whatnot, instead go into a secret account controlled by our mayor, and that money is then doled out willy-nilly in the name of economic development, but it's just really a giant slush fund of which there are so many, many terrible stories, not just here, but across the country. But that's how it works. It's a city thing enabled by a state law.
And this has been since 1986. And like I said, 121 active TIFs last year. So, okay, you've been doing a lot of studying of the TIF projects, these districts. Give us an update here, because now you've got some numbers from 2024.
Yeah, oddly, I seem to be the only person in the city interested in this, aside from yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, we should be interested.
Yeah, and so all your listeners are going to want to, you know, sit on the edge of their chairs and get out their pens and papers and write this down, because this is their money. This is their, you know, their property tax dollars. And if you're not sitting in a TIF district, you still want to sit at the edge of your chair, because this affects your tax base, how much we're all paying in the county of Cook. All right. As you say, we're talking about the city of Chicago, 121 of these TIF districts. They're all splotchy looking. They're odd looking critters. If you look at them on a map, they exist inside wards, but they also sprawl across wards. Mm-hmm. And it's about 30% of all the land in the city of Chicago, all the properties are in these districts. Okay. As I say, wherever there's a TIF district, listen to this giant sucking sound of a vacuum cleaner. That's the sound of the mayor sucking your property tax dollars away from you to some secret location. And in 2024, these TIFs removed $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion. So in other words, if you own property, or if you know how you know property tax works here, our units of government rely on property taxes to keep the lights on, you know, like our schools, the libraries, the city itself, the county of Cook,
sure,
et cetera. And so when a dollar of property tax goes missing, that is to say, it does not go where it's supposed to go, there are victims. And the biggest loss is to the Board of Ed. The schools are supposed to get 56 cents of every property tax dollar collected. So if $1.2 billion of our property taxes in the city of Chicago did not go where they were supposed to go, where did they go? What happened to them?
Right.
What happened to that money? Well, they go into these little bank accounts. Again, each TIF has a bank account controlled by the mayor and his allies. All right. These same 121 TIFs have collected a total of $10.5 billion since they were turned on. That's how much we're talking about. But it's even worse than that, because there are about, I would say, 67 or so dead TIFs, or you know what I'm saying, expired TIFs.
Right.
TIFs that are no longer with us
after the 23 years, right?
But they were around for a minute. So if you add up the amount of money that those bad boys sucked away, plus the amount of money that I just mentioned, the grand total for TIFs taken off the table since the program was started to last year was $14 billion.
$14 billion. That's
$14 billion.
Incredible here. So okay. The mayor controls these funds here. So all of this money, last year you talked about the $1.2 billion that was extracted here. And one of the issues is that they say that the city says that, hey, this money is supposed to go to blighted areas, but you have tracked where the money is going. And that's decidedly really not the case in a lot of these TIF districts.
Well, there's one more number, Mike, that we got to mention, and that's how much was left in the TIF accounts at the end of the year. So if you think about these 121 TIFs, each having like its own checkbook, if you will, mm-hmm. there's money at the beginning of the year, money comes in, money goes out. Each of these TIFs do support projects in their respective wards, some of which are probably good projects and probably need to happen, and others are questionable. But at the end of the year, there's a balance. So the question is, I think this is a pretty important question, how much money are we talking about? Because remember, the mayor is always saying we're broke. And in another conversation I think we need to have, He is proposing a boatload of new taxes and fees on our asses, you know, for 2026.
Right.
So I think we need to have this number in our heads as we enter into that other conversation of how are we going to, you know, make ends meet for the next fiscal year. All right. The answer, drum roll, please. This would be a great time for a sound effect from your vast sound effect library. Mm-hmm. The answer is $3.2 billion.
Wow. So that's the money that is just sitting in these TIF accounts.
That's right.
$3.2 billion.
At the beginning of 2026. So on January 1st, 2026, that was the case. Now, the mayor, as I've said before, the mayor always uses this money for like a big bucket of spackle to smear it on, you know, overruns and other projects that come along. So we're not sure how much is sitting in there now, but my guess is it's probably at least $2 billion, maybe more. Hard to say, because he's gonna pull some of that money out and use it for his 2025 budget. That was from last year to this, and now going forward to 2026. But be that as it may, on January 1st of 2025, it was $3.2 billion. So that's a record. That's a record breaking number.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of money we're talking about here. And to your point about the mayor, let's focus on what he's doing. What has he said about TIFs? I mean, we keep hearing that we are in this budget shortfall. We don't have enough money to do anything around here. And then we've got $3.2 billion at the beginning of this year sitting in these accounts. What's the mayor doing with this? Is there a response from City Hall with regards to TIFs?
Well, he wants to reform them. And for that, I applaud anything that puts a serious, you know, lens on this program and explains it to the public is meritorious. I haven't seen him, or I haven't seen his agents run around the city, you know, going ward to ward in any kind of community meetings, explaining TIFs as I have done since 2012. I think I did my 257th meeting, all without pay or much love from anybody, but the people appreciate it when you're in the community. I'll tell you that much.
Sure.
So he has, let me put it this way. He has spoken over the years when he was running for office and since he's now been in office about reform. One of the things he wanted to do was to sunset TIFs and use that money to finance a bond. And that bond would be used for homelessness and affordable housing initiatives, which is great. Anything that cancels a TIF, I am for. He just hasn't gone far enough. Now, his latest pronouncement would have to be in the form of this task force. It's called A Stronger Financial Foundation for Every Chicagoan. So this came out literally a few days ago. This is a very high level group of individuals serving at the mayor's pleasure. And they were tasked with trying to figure out where we get some money around here. Yeah, right. can we save some money? Can we generate some money? So their report just came out. I went through it, and I got to say, this gets a D for me for civic imagination. They're talking about over $1.2 billion in new fees and new taxes. They want to raise potentially property taxes by $56 million. They want to add and upgrade taxes on services, like when you get your hair cut or your nails filed or you go and get an insurance policy or something, up to $305 million in fees on services. This is the horrible way to go, the wrong way to go. 21 new fees, 8 new taxes, plus the increases in the property taxes and the taxes on services like haircuts. The city council is saying, take the property tax rise off the table. They're not going to vote for it. So you're left with this like smorgasbord of crappy, regressive fees, you know, more garbage, maybe more, bring back the grocery tax that's in here, So no to all of that.
Yeah.
My advice to the mayor and his people, if you just want to do one thing that won't hurt anybody but will benefit everyone, is kill TIFs.
And maybe get some of that money back, you know?
Yeah, kill TIFs. You'll take whatever's in the pot now. So whatever that number is, if it's not $3 billion, maybe it's $2 billion, whatever that number is, would flow to all the units of government according to the percentage on your property tax bill. So, for example, if there's $2 billion in the TIF funds right this minute, and the mayor did as I wish and flushed the TIF money, this Board of Ed would get about $950 million as a one-time. And they need it. And then going forward, since we wouldn't be pulling TIFs, all the property taxes that are, you know, being driven and spun off by our properties in the city of Chicago, they would all flow like they're supposed to flow. So there'd be another billion and change there. And the city of Chicago gets about whatever, 12% of that. So that's a bump. The Board of Ed gets 56% of that. So that's going forward, you know, in the future tax years. So that would be, you know, like that would be my and you know what? It's free. You don't have to pay me big money. I think the city hired, I don't know who they hired, a big consultant for $3 million.
This one's on the house.
This is on the house, you know. You want to tip me, Mayor Johnson? You know, give me a lifetime supply of a pizza or something, you know.
Yeah.
Or let me ride the CTA for free, you know. give me a little something there. But you know what? That's my free offer to the mayor and his people.
Well, I'll tell you, we need your watchdogness, if that's even a word. But that's what you're doing here. You're keeping an eye on these TIF districts, these numbers. And we can see all of this research and all of these numbers at the website TIFReports.com. T-I-F, TIFReports.com, about tax increment financing districts all across the city of Chicago. We are not broke. That is the message that Tom Tresser wants to get across. He is a civic educator and public defender, and he is just all about studying the impact of TIFs. Tom, you know I love talking to you, man. We got to keep this conversation going.
All right, listen, it's, you know, democracy is a full contact sport, my friend. If you're listening to this, you got to get up out of your chair and stop, put your phone down and get out into the streets, call your alderman, call the mayor, go to public meetings, go to wearenotbroke.org, tiffreports.com. You can reach me at tom@tresser.com. I'm happy to respond. People, we need to be active and engaged and smart. It's your money after all.
Let's get into some local music right now. And this is a cool collaboration from just really two amazing local groups, Las Guitarras de España and the Sarabi Ensemble. And they've released this new album together. And there's a show coming up Monday, October 6th at the City Winery in Chicago. And this show celebrates the release of some new music from this collaboration. Carlo Basile is the band leader in Las Guitarras de España, co-band leader in the Sarabi Ensemble. He's been here on the show a few times because, Carlo, you're just that prolific. So much going on, man. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, thanks so much, Mike. Yeah, try to stay busy. That's my key.
That's the name of the game. Yeah, that's right. To try to stay sane these days, I suppose. So
totally.
I said that this is kind of like a collaboration. I don't know if you want to call it a super group. You've worked with so many people in the world music scene in Chicago. So tell us about this collaboration with these two groups. What are these two groups and what have you put together?
Well, I kind of took the idea that, you know, we've done a lot of touring the last few years to places like Vietnam, Senegal, Spain, Portugal, Mexico. And I wanted to include pieces that were either performed in those places or maybe influenced by those places. And then, you know, friends that I've met along the way on the road, but also the people that I work with here in Chicago, right? So kind of an all-encompassing way for me to kind of celebrate, to be honest, 60 years on this planet.
Wow.
And yeah. So, you know, there was that. So it's kind of, in some ways, it's a vanity project, I'll have to admit. But I think the music is very creative and the people involved are super creative. So, you know, we could see how people respond to these new pieces.
Yeah, so this music is, I think, really good. I was checking out this album recently, and tell us the name, because I don't want to mispronounce it. You tell us the name of this album. I know it translates into Globetrotting Guitar, which I think is a great name for an album. What's the name of the record?
So, Guitarra Trotamundos. You know, my Spanish accent isn't the best either, but Guitarra Trotamundos. And I thought of that right away because of the fact that we tend to, when we were in India just recently, one of the members ran in the Mumbai Marathon. I just ran in the Boston Marathon earlier this year. And we tend to run a lot, the people in the group. It's like it gives us a chance to kind of clear our heads and get outside. And, I think it helps with a lot of things, jet lag, creativity.
Sure.
I wanted to put the idea of this like kind of globetrotting guitar together. And there's a cool image on the album because I was doing the Chicago Marathon last year, and a photographer, you know, I just don't know how it came up, but it's an image of me running in Chinatown. So I have, you know, this Mandarin behind me and a really cool image of me running. And so we kind of used the map of Chicago instead of my actual image. We kind of inserted the map of Chicago there. And the album cover actually has all our different little runs that we've done in places around the world. So you see the map of these runs. And I thought, you know, it's kind of cool to put it all together. So that's why we went with that.
Definitely globe trotting, literally trotting, and running, I suppose. So the album here, I mean, there are a bunch of tracks on this record, and it is a combination of a few things. I mean, you've got some beautiful sort of Spanish guitar. You have really nice vocals on there. And then you got, you know, some blues, Get My Mojo Working. You can throw that in there, too. It runs the gamut.
Well, you have to come home, right? And so when I started playing music, I was playing R&B and this Muddy Waters. You know, it can't get more Chicago than Muddy doing Got My Mojo Working. So, I've always kind of played that on the side. And so there's kind of like a Spanish guitar groove that I'm playing on that with a great local player, Fran Banish, playing some of the blues licks on there, and a great singer, Gerald McClendon, I think the track was a lot of fun, and it was recorded live, basically. We just did a couple of takes and let it go, and I thought it was great. So I said, it's got to go on here, you know?
Got my mojo working, but just won't work on you. Got my mojo working, but just won't work on you. I want to love you so bad till I don't know.
I think it turned out excellent. And, that's just kind of an idea of, like I say, the gamut that you're running here with this music, because yes, you have this worldly influence, and you talked about how you guys have been touring for years all over the world, literally all over the world, playing in places, like you said, Vietnam, Mexico, Portugal, all around the world. And so you've been composing along the way. You've been doing some sort of ideation, trying to come up with new stuff. And that's what this is. So the show that's coming up on Monday, October 6th, 7:30 p.m. at the City Winery, 1200 West Randolph in Chicago. Tell us about what we can expect when we check out the show.
So I have artists from both of the groups, the Rabi Ensemble and Las Guitarras de España. I looked at the stage clock. Like at some point, 19 artists will come on and off the stage. So plus dancers, you know, who are involved. So, I mean, but, you know, I didn't overprogram the show. It sounds like a lot. I tried not to do too much music. I mean, it is a Monday night. We start at 7:30, so it's not too late. So folks come out, have dinner at City Winery, check out the show. They'll see some Indian dance, some flamenco dance, Arabic and Mexican dance, along with some of the new material. I'm not going to do every track on the CD, but most of them. And then a big finale with everybody kind of jamming together. But all of it will happen, hopefully, in some sort of organized, chaotic fashion.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's going to be great. And I just, you and I have talked about this before, but I just feel that this kind of music is necessary right now because, we're so fractured, and especially around the world, relations are what they are. And sometimes we forget that,
you know, people that don't live here. Hey, they're good people too. And they can be a positive influence. And that's kind of what you're channeling here. So I feel like at this time, not to get too, I don't know, existential with it, but this kind of music is just a celebration of different cultures. And as much as it is Chicago, because Chicago kind of makes all this possible, doesn't it?
Well, and, you know, let's just get right to it. Chicago has a ton of immigrants, many of which formed both of these groups. You know, I happen to be born in Chicago. I'm one of the few people in both groups who actually was born here. But the people here in these groups come from different places. I've traveled to different places to meet other people. So, I mean, I think it's a natural thing for us to be doing this in a place like Chicago. And we've talked about this before. This is what we're celebrating. We recently did a program for the Immigrant Relief Fund, which I think is super important right now. I don't think we're afraid to talk about this stuff. We're certainly not afraid to do this type of music. But at the same time, you know, it's not going to be a political type of a performance. It's, I think, the music, the artists are on the stage, the vibe, it all speaks for itself. Don't need to pound anybody over the head with these ideas. But I definitely think we need to represent, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. We're not going to start any revolutions or anything on Monday night, October 6th.
No.
But we'll have fun. No. It's going to be a fun show. Yeah. Really appreciating all kinds of music. And again, we can check out this show, Las Guitarras de España, and the Sarabi Ensemble coming together for this new album. And the record release show is Monday, October 6th at City Winery, 1200 West Randolph in Chicago, in the West Loop neighborhood, 7:30 p.m. And we could check out SarabiEnsemble.com, your website, CarloBasileGuitar.com. And Carlo, it's always so much fun talking to you. You're a great musician, great guitar player and composer and band leader. And this new album, Guitarras Trotamundos, you probably say it better than I do, Globetrotting Guitar.
Good.
Yeah, I know I'm working on it. I got a future in this business. It's a really cool album. Totally dig it. We should all check it out. Carlo, thanks for talking to us today and good luck with everything in the future, man.
Thanks so much, Mike. And I might just add, you know, you can stream these things these days, but if you really want to help us out, you can go to my website, which you just mentioned, CarloBasileGuitar.com. You could actually buy the record that way too, direct. There'll be a link up after October 6th to get it on Bandcamp, where you can actually pay for the whole album and download it. So that would be great.
October is right around the corner, and did you know that October is Black Fine Art Month? It's a celebration of the Black Fine Art aesthetic. It's an annual recognition of artists, innovators, collectors, curators, and those vested in the Black art tradition, and it's an opportunity to commemorate and elevate these contributions through art programming. And speaking of art programming, coming up at the end of October, October 30th through November 2nd, the Pigmented Black Fine Art Fair takes place at the Joe B. Arts Center in Bridgeport, celebrating Black Fine Art excellence. Patricia Andrews Keenan is the founder of Pigment International. That's a local organization reporting on the people, issues, trends, and events shaping Black contemporary art. She is here with us today on Outside the Loop to talk about what's coming up in October. Patricia, it's been a few years. How are you?
I am very good, Mike. It's good to talk to you again about what we're doing.
Yeah, this is really cool. I think all the stuff that you have coming up very shortly here. So before we get into that, just kind of a refresher here about Pigment International. This organization was founded by you in 2018. So tell us what you set out to do here and why you're doing it.
Absolutely. So when we founded Pigment, what I learned was that, or what I believed is that storytelling has power. And my background was in corporate communications and journalism. I was a journalism grad in school. And I really wanted to tell the stories of the Black artists and all those in the Black Echo art ecosystem that I had met over the years. So that was our goal. And what we did is we built a platform where we could tell those stories through digital newsletters, through printed publications, through exhibitions, and through events. And that's what we've done. And over the course of those 7 years, we've traveled the world. Actually, today I'm in Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian Museum for a collective event. So that's what we've done. We tried to tell those stories. And I think we've been very successful at that goal.
And I think it's just important here to re-emphasize why you're taking the time to kind of elevate these stories, and why we're talking about this here on the program is sometimes these stories, they get lost. And certainly over the course of our history, I mean, certain voices have been prioritized, and now I think we're spending some time trying to elevate or re-elevate and shine a light on some of these stories and perspectives that maybe didn't always make it into a textbook or weren't always in a museum. And that's really important, just to take a second and step back and say, we need to emphasize this, don't we?
Absolutely. And we look at both the historical artists, some of the ones that have, you know, that have achieved some success, but also how do we help those artists who are trying to build careers? They may be emerging artists, or they might be mid-career artists. But what we know for certain is if they don't have documentation and nobody is writing about them, they can't be elevated to the point where they could be included in the museum. Many of our artists have toiled in anonymity over the years, and that's what we're trying to do, trying to tell their stories so that they can attain their rightful place in history.
And I think that if we don't know that these stories exist when these artists come along, I think mainstream society might kind of look twice and say, wait, what? What are you talking about? What's going
and
on?
And who are they?
Right. Yes. So I think that's part of it. Like, we have to keep talking about these folks who are telling a story from a particular point of view, because if we don't know that that point of view exists, when it comes along and we see it, we might think, oh, this person, I don't know what they're talking about, so we'll just blow them off, you know?
Right. And I think, you know, most artists, they're doing things to cement their place in history. That's why they do art, so that they can be remembered. And I've always been a collector of Black artists myself. I started collecting posters and memorabilia that I would find at flea markets. And then when I was able to buy art, I was able to elevate my collecting. So many of us are collecting these artists, but we also need to write and tell their stories. And that's what Pigment tries to do.
And you're doing this now. We're going into, in the not too distant future here, we're going into October. And I'm willing to bet that not too many of us know that Black Fine Art Month is coming up in October. So tell us what this is and tell us how this came to be.
Certainly. So when we started Pigment International, we literally started searching to see, is there a national recognition of Black fine art that's in the vein of a Black History Month or a Black Music Month that a lot of people know about? And we didn't find anything. So we took it on ourselves to begin to put that together. And we worked with Congresswoman Robin Kelly to have that entered into the congressional record in 2019. And so we're in our sixth year of celebrating Black Fine Art Month. And we've asked other people across the country to adopt it as well. It wasn't something that we were trying to just do separately here in Chicago. We wanted people across the country to do that. And Aurora, Illinois has adopted Fine Art Month, Black Fine Art Month. In Houston, Texas, they've adopted it. And today I'm here in D.C. with a group of historically Black colleges and universities, and we're talking to them about adopting it as well. So how can you celebrate that with the programming that we're doing, with artist recognition, with just everything that people are doing in October. And I will tell you, Mike, that one of the reasons we picked October, it's the height of the art season, but it's also the longest month of the year, unlike February, which is the shortest. So.
Right. That I like that move. That's a very nice strategic move on
your part.
Yes. So, all right. At the end of the month, October 30th through November 2nd, I mentioned this before, the Pigmented Black Fine Art Fair. Again, this is happening here in Chicago at the Joe B. Arts Center in Bridgeport. That's at 1029 West 35th Street. And tell us about what is coming up here, because you've got a few days here and it's kind of an action-packed few days.
It really is. So we're going to open on that Thursday evening with a gala reception. And what I didn't know when we decided to do this was there were some significant anniversaries that happened right here in Chicago. One being the 85th anniversary of the Southside Community Arts Center, which is about to undergo a multi-million dollar rehabilitation. Also, it's the 85th anniversary of the American Negro Exhibition, which happened in Chicago. And it was a celebration of the end, it was a recognition of the abolition of slavery in 1940. You can find a lot of history about it on the website for the Chicago Historic Museum. So when we open on the Thursday, we want to have that look and that feel of the 40s. So we're going to do some really fun stuff. We're partnering with the Diaspora Rhythms, which is a Black collectors group, to host that opening event. And then we open the show on that Friday. And what we've done, we've invited Black-owned galleries from across the country. And we have 13 galleries, Chicago-based, Detroit, Atlanta, Memphis, Tennessee, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, even from the East Coast in New Jersey. So we have Black-owned galleries from across the country that are coming to be a part of this exhibition. In addition, we're going to have community groups like the Southside Community Arts Center and the DuSable Museum as our partners for this. We have programming. We have artists from across the city, Fahim Majid, Norman Teague, Candace Hunter, Dr. Carol Adams, who actually ran the DuSable Museum. We have programming where we will do talks with them. Denise Gardner, who is the president emeritus of the Art Institute of Chicago. We also have a student exhibition. We have students from Gary Comer Youth Center who will be putting on an exhibition as well. So we're very excited about the way that people have stepped up to be a part of this. And like you say, it's going to be action-packed from the opening to the closing on that Sunday.
That's right. And we can go to the website for Pigment International, pigmentintl.com, pigmentintl.com.
Yes.
And everyone can go to this and you'll check out the website for all the details. And I think this is important because, yes, you are going to have a lot of events. There's a lot of art. There are a lot of conversations. But again, it goes back to kind of the time we're living in. And I keep coming back to this just because there are so many things happening every week, every day, yes, and we're trying to stay on top of it. But look, you're in D.C. You're going to be at the Smithsonian. We've heard that the current sort of winds in Washington want to maybe revise some of the exhibitions there and, for lack of a better term, clean it up to try to not face some of our difficult past, specifically when it comes to race and slavery. And I think what you're talking about here, this art, I mean, it has to tap into that history, right? We have to like understand that this is all connected. And if we're going to celebrate Black art, we got to know the history, don't we?
Absolutely. We have a weekly newsletter that we do as well. And I think the thing that got me most recently was the administration's move to pull an image from the National Park Service of a formerly enslaved man. He was sometimes known as Peter, sometimes known as Garden. The photographers of the day, when photography was a brand new medium, took pictures of his welted back from having been beaten when he was a slave. He escaped. He joined the Union Army and then worked to free other slaves. So we actually put something in our newsletter this past weekend where we asked people to post pictures of him, because you take something away doesn't mean it didn't happen. And we have to recognize that and use the technology we have today to continue to show those images. When you try to cover things up, it doesn't present an opportunity to heal, and when you hide things. So no one wants to hold people accountable for what happened then. But again, we don't want to erase anyone's history. From any immigrant that came to this country, all those stories are important and should be recognized.
And through art, I mean, what a great medium to tell those stories and to understand different perspectives. And that is in part what you are all about here. This is, I think, a really cool event that's coming up end of October, October 30th through November 2nd. It's the Pigmented Black Fine Art Fair. It's taking place at the Joe B. Arts Center in Bridgeport, 1029 West 35th Street in Chicago. And we can check out the website, pigmentintl.com. Patricia Andrews Keenan is the founder of Pigment International. We're getting into Black Fine Art Month here. This is a very exciting time, Patricia. I'm so excited for you, what you have going on here. And keep doing what you're doing, because we need those stories out there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike, for speaking with me. And we hope everyone will come out and enjoy us and see this beautiful art.
And that'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 989 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty in the WGN radio studio. Have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.